Support for WPR comes from UW-Superior Center for Continuing Education, offering Conversations on Living Alone, a three-part series beginning Wednesday, April 17th via Zoom. Details at uwsuper.edu.
Support for WPR comes from The Alliance, a not-for-profit cooperative committed to helping employers self-fund by providing data and insights to manage their health plans. Info is at the-alliance.org.
It's time for a Wisconsin Life. March is Women's History Month. Schools are part of the landscape today, but they only came into existence in early Wisconsin once a critical mass of parents was willing to hire a teacher. Wisconsin got its first public school teacher in the 1820s. Writer Karen Sayman tells us about this well-educated woman from the Stockbridge Indian tribe.
Electa Quinney is a Stockbridge Indian, born around 1807 in the state of New York. And she was born to really the most prominent family in Stockbridge tribal history. Her father, her grandfather, ultimately her brothers were all tribal chiefs. At about age 7, Electa was sent to boarding school. And these were not the BIA boarding schools of years later. She went to a couple of boarding schools in New York that were girls finishing schools. The best white families up and down the East Coast sent their daughters to these schools. Young women at that time really didn't go to college. The colleges just weren't open to them. So this was really about as high as you could go in terms of education. Went on to become a teacher, taught for 6 years in New York, and then the Stockbridge Indians were pushed out of New York. They saw the writing on the wall. They were a very well-educated, very savvy tribe, and negotiated a deal with the Menominee Indians to come to Wisconsin. So she came here, arrived here on June 20th, 1828. She was the very first public school teacher in Wisconsin. So when she arrived here, she was about 21 years old, taught at a school in a place called Statesburg, which today is Kaukauna, and taught Stockbridge children and the children of white missionaries who had come out here with her. It was a mission school. But the teachers there were paid by the public funds of the Indians. This is distinguished from other schools that had been here in Wisconsin prior to that. You had families who had hired private tutors. You had some private schools that were run by churches. You had a handful of children who were here with fathers who were stationed at military forts. The U.S. military had a handful of schools up until then. And she taught math, geography, history, spelling. It was a Christian school, so she started each day with a prayer. But it was a little one-room schoolhouse, multi-educational schoolhouse, everybody in one room, sitting right on the Fox River. We have one student of hers who actually wrote down his memories years later and said that it was modeled after the best public schools of New England, which was quite a compliment. That we had a highly educated, highly intelligent Indian woman who was our first public school teacher here in Wisconsin. That, of course, is the most important thing, to recognize that accomplishment.
Karen Sayman is a journalist and author of Electa Quinney, Stockbridge Teacher. Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. This episode is produced in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. For more information, visit wisconsinlife.org.
Now, in honor of Women's History Month, Erica Janik joins us in studio to talk about women who hold key places in the pages of Wisconsin history. Erica, thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
Well, before we dive into the actual women themselves of Wisconsin history, let's start with the state constitution, 1848, a key year. What happened?
Well, actually, so 1848 is the year that Wisconsin became a state. And the constitution that we adopted that became, you know, the law of our land was actually our second constitution. We had a first draft in 1846 that was a little too radical. And one of the very radical provisions it included was that married women could own property. Now, in pretty much every other state, women were property. They couldn't own property. So this was pretty far out there for the time. And Unfortunately, this constitution, along with a couple other pretty radical provisions in it, were thrown aside, and they rewrote a new constitution that did not have married women's property rights in it.
But eventually, it made the cut a couple years later.
Eventually, yes. You do find that women are gaining more rights in the late 19th century, not just in Wisconsin, but nationally. But, you know, it definitely wasn't written into our founding documents, despite some efforts to make that happen.
And there's a bit of interesting history we were talking about this morning as we were talking about beer and the possible Wisconsin Beer Commission. There's a crossover between beer and women's rights in Wisconsin.
That's right. The brewing industry was a major power in early Wisconsin. And as, you know, evidenced by this possibility of us becoming this kind of brewing center of the world. But the brewers were really kind of against women's rights. And they had kind of a good reason for thinking this. They thought that if women were given the vote, that they would vote for temperance. And they were probably right. Throughout the 19th century, women were the leading advocates for temperance. And one of the reasons that they were doing it is because a lot of their families were really ruined by men's alcoholism. And so women thought that they just needed to get rid of alcohol. And so the brewers, that would have really, you know, put them out of business. And so they were not in favor of giving women the right to vote.
And were they influential?
They were very influential. They were some of the leading citizens of our state. Think about like Frederick Pabst, a very leading figure in Wisconsin. There was a lot of money that was coming into the state from the brewing industry. So it was in the best interest for some people to think that they needed to support the brewers' position on this. And Wisconsin actually had a suffrage referendum in 1912, and the brewers were pretty much instrumental in helping to get that defeated.
Interesting. But eventually the tides of history turned, of course, and not a key issue with brewers anymore. Thank heavens.
As far as I know, I don't think they're still against women's rights.
Well, let's dig into some of the women because there's so many fascinating stories here. I want to start with one, a Ho-Chunk leader called Glory of the Morning. Can you tell us about her?
So Glory of the Morning is actually the first woman we have a written record of. And she was mentioned in an account that was written by a British soldier. His name was Jonathan Carver, and he was traveling through Wisconsin in the 1760s. And in traveling through the state, he ran across a female chief right around where Nina is today. And she was the last known Ho-Chunk female chief. Glory of the Morning was chosen to lead her people when she was about 18 years old in 1727. She eventually married a French officer who resigned his commission after the marriage and became a fur trader. They had three children together. Eventually, he ended up abandoning her. But the family remained very prominent in Wisconsin. They became the French kind of an anglicization, get that word out there, of the French last name that she had through her marriage became Decora. And the Decora family you find all throughout 18th century and 19th century Wisconsin, a very prominent family. And Glory of the Morning's two sons also became Ho-Chunk chiefs.
Oh, fascinating. And, well, there's another key leader let's move to now that you want us to know about, a woman who revolutionized the care for Union troops wounded in the Civil War. Her name was Cordelia Harvey. What do we know about her?
So Cordelia Harvey, she was actually married to a Wisconsin governor. His name was Lewis P. Harvey. He became governor of Wisconsin in 1861 when the Civil War broke out. Now, he kind of tragically died. He was traveling through the South to visit some Wisconsin troops, and he ended up kind of tripping and ended up drowning. And she was, you know, obviously very heartbroken over the loss of her husband, but it didn't really deter her in her work and trying to improve the conditions for Union soldiers. She went all over the South visiting Wisconsin troops and military hospitals. She was actually appointed our state sanitary agent. That was really referring to people that were kind of looking after hospitals and seeing how well, you know, hygiene and cleanliness were in some of these military installations. She actually became convinced through her travels throughout the South that that hot, wet climate was actually bad for people's health, that it was impairing their ability to get better, and that these soldiers should actually be brought back north in order to feel better. So she traveled all the way to Washington, D.C., where she met with President Abraham Lincoln and said, "We need a hospital in the North to care for Union soldiers." And he was kind of skeptical of her idea, not really sure that that was the best thing to do. But he did eventually authorize the what came to be called the Harvey Army Hospital here in Madison, named after Cordelia and her husband. And the hospital was very, very successful. And after the war, it actually morphed into a home for orphan children, because in the Civil War, about 500,000 men were killed. And so a lot of families lost their means of support. And so I think it's something like 700 children eventually lived in that home in the decade after the war.
So she was state sanitary agent for Wisconsin troops, an unusual title. I'm pretty sure that we don't have one of those now.
Pretty sure we don't.
But I'm curious, were there other women like her in other states, or was she something of an outlier who was doing remarkable things for a woman at the time?
There were definitely other sanitary commissions all throughout the country. That's a pretty common thing during the Civil War. But I think she is really a remarkable woman in the fact that she was so determined to get this hospital built, that she was willing to travel all the way to D.C. to meet with the president. He was unwilling to meet with her at first, thought this was kind of a silly idea. Why should he be paying attention to her? But she persisted. She would not give up. She knew that she was right. And she eventually, you know, managed to convince Abraham Lincoln that we needed to have this hospital. And she got it built. I mean, this happened here in Madison and was very, very successful. So I think, you know, she's definitely one of a kind.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's look at Theodora Winton Eumanns. She made a mark as a journalist in Wisconsin and went on to become a leader nationally as well. How did she get her start?
So she actually began as a journalist for the Waukesha Freeman newspaper. She wrote a column that was about women's political issues. And the column became so popular that it was actually the only column in that whole newspaper that had a byline. So newspaper articles in the past often didn't have the author's name there. But Eumanns had her name on her column. And so she eventually becomes a leader in Waukesha women's clubs. She becomes president of the Wisconsin Federation of Women's Clubs in 1898. She's really active in all of these kind of political organizations, volunteer organizations. In the 1910s, she really becomes very active in the suffrage movement. She uses her journalism experience and connections to really publicize the cause of women's rights, to try to, you know, be louder than the voice of the brewers, and to win endorsements of groups like the German Turners, a group that hadn't traditionally supported women's suffrage, but she really used her persuasive skills to get people on board for suffrage. Then she became very active on the national level. She was very instrumental in helping to get the Wisconsin to become the first state to actually ratify the suffrage amendment. It was a kind of an arms race with Illinois, but Wisconsin won. And after that, Eumanns served as president of the Wisconsin chapter of the League of Women Voters, which is another organization founded by a Wisconsin woman, Carrie Chapman Catt. So Wisconsin has played a very leading role, our women on the national level, doing really phenomenal things.
Erica, it's fantastic to hear about this. I'm sure there's so much more you could tell us, but thank you for telling us about these women and introducing us to them.
You're very welcome.
We've been talking to Erica Janik, the author of Marketplace of the Marvelous and the producer of Wisconsin Life.